It's basically Luther's sinfulness sort of rationalized. That's the Lutheran heresy as far as I can see it. It's rationalized misbehavior. By the way, I'm going to come back to the concept of rationalized misbehavior towards the end, because that's a very important thing to consider in when we consider notions of freedom and what actually limits human freedom, authentic human freedom. Okay, so for clarity, I should say here that there are acts that men do that are not voluntary and therefore not free. These are things that we have in common with beasts. So, for instance, respiration, digestion, and the myriad other activities, electrochemical things that happen in your bodies, that we do every moment to keep us alive and functioning at the level of mere sentient activity. In other words, everything we have in common with the beasts, right? Philosophers call such acts actus hominis, acts of a man, as distinguished from actus humanus, which are human acts. As I often explain to my students, if you throw me outside of the window, I behave just like a rock would, right? So it's not a voluntary thing for me merely to be subject to the laws of gravity, right? Nor is it a voluntary thing for my heart to be beating. Nor is it a voluntary thing for me to breathe or to respirate or digest or any of these activities, you know, the blood coursing through my veins, through this particular ventricle or that particular artery. This isn't something I'm exercising my free will over. And thank God I don't have to do that, right? I don't have to remember to breathe. I don't have to remember to have my heart beat. Those are things I have in common with the beasts. But they're not free. There is a certain necessity there, but they're not consequently human acts. They're not acts of the will. They're acts of a man. The following sentence from On Grace and Free Choice may be long and need to be read two or three times, but it is very illuminating of the truth concerning man's will being free and the consequent moral responsibility we all shoulder by virtue of our freely chosen acts. So when I copied this out of the Cistercian Publications edition of St. Bernard's On Grace and Free Will, I was strongly tempted to punctuate it differently. But use my free will to deny myself that pleasure. So let me read it as well as I can. Only the will, then, since by reason of its innate freedom it can be compelled by no force or necessity to dissent from itself or to consent in any matter in spite of itself, makes a creature righteous or unrighteous, capable and deserving of happiness or of sorrow, insofar as it shall have consented to righteousness or unrighteousness. Let me kind of reread it, but unpack it as I do so. So he's got this, keep in mind in Latin, the syntax is not as, the flow of the words, the flow of the meaning is not as radically dependent upon syntax as it is in English. Nouns and their verbs that are joined to those nouns can be separated by numerous words in a sentence, and it still makes sense. So only the will, he says, makes a creature righteous or unrighteous. Only the will makes a creature righteous or unrighteous. And why? By reason of its innate freedom, it can be compelled by no force or necessity to dissent from itself or to consent in any manner in spite of itself. That's why. So that's what makes us capable and deserving of happiness or of sorrow, insofar as it shall have, it, the will, shall have consented to righteousness or unrighteousness. I'm still nursing a sore throat from a head cold, so every once in a while you might hear me sipping tea. You're listening to Reconquest on the Crusade Premium Channel, part of the Veritas Radio Network. This is Brother Andre Marie, and we are talking about meditations on freedom, and this is episode number 280. The truth that sin is in the will is an immediate conclusion from what St. Bernard writes here. While we might be externally influenced, threatened, cajoled, directed, encouraged, etc., in our will, we always remain radically free. This is an anthropological or psychological fact that follows from our very nature as it was created by God, prescinding from the fall. It is the basis of all merit and culpability, and therefore of the notions of reward and of punishment. Over and above this first freedom, the innate freedom of nature, are two other freedoms, that from sin and that from sorrow, which are not natural endowments but supernatural gifts. St. Bernard explains that freedom from sin is what St. Paul described when he wrote this, quote, "Where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom." That's from 2 Corinthians 3:17. Where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. This second freedom, again, the second freedom, again, is the freedom from sin. It's also called the freedom of grace. It doesn't flow from our nature, it flows from grace, and it's the freedom from sin. This second freedom is not innate to us, but results from grace, and stands in contrast, so the Abbot of Clairvaux notes, to that slavery to sin that the Holy Apostle describes elsewhere. And this is a quote from Romans. "For when you were the servants of sin, you were free men to justice." Being freemen to justice, wait, let's see, I'm sorry, I have a parenthetical expression that I'm trying to skip. Let me start the quote again. "For when you were the servants of sin, you were free to justice. But now, being made free from sin and become servants to God, you have your fruit unto sanctification and the end, life everlasting." So the parenthetical expression in the quote that I tried to skip is this. St. Paul is ironically contrasting slavery to sin and slavery to God, or to justice, or of justice. Being free men to justice means being liberated from God's holiness or righteousness. In other words, it's a false freedom. It's a damning freedom. St. Paul frequently, by the way, does these, he'll put up these radical parities, these two opposing concepts. So another big one that he uses is he says that the flesh lusteth against the spirit and the spirit lusteth against the flesh. So he takes these two things and describes them almost in terms that the spirit lusting doesn't seem to work, right? But he's talking about this war he finds in his members, where his higher faculties want to do God's will and his lower faculties are directing him towards sin. So here, he's got a similar dichotomy going, where on the one hand, we're the servants of sin, and we're free to justice, an ironic kind of freedom, freedom from good, you might say. And then, whereas being, once we get grace, we're made free from sin and become servants to God. So there's a servitude that is freedom, right? The service of God and the service of God's law, serving God through observing his law, seems to be servitude, right? And it is of a type. But that servitude is itself ennobling and is liberating. Citing our Lord saying, "If therefore the Son shall make you free, you shall be free indeed," St. Bernard tells us, and that quote from our Lord is from John 8:36. St. Bernard tells us this: he meant that even free choice stands in need of a liberator, but one, of course, who would set it free, not from necessity, which was quite unknown to it since this pertains to the will, but rather from sin, into which it had fallen by both freely and willingly, and also from the penalty of sin, which it, rather the will, carelessly incurred and has unwillingly borne. We ought not quickly pass over the profound thought that even the free choice stands in need of a liberator. By the way, the Latin word is liberum arbitrium, so there was a separate word in Latin for will, and that's voluntas. They speak of the voluntas, which gives us the word voluntary in English, and they speak of the liberum arbitrium, the free choice. So St. Thomas, as we'll learn in a little bit, says that the two are the same thing, that in man, free choice is something that's found in the fact, they might be distinguished, but the one is in the other. The free choice is found in the will, which is by its very nature free. Okay, so we shouldn't pass very quickly over that. Even free choice stands in need of a liberator. The words are beautiful, yes, but there is much more than mere aesthetics here. Our free will, after the fall, contracted the defect of what St. Thomas calls malice, and needs to be saved from it, or freed. The liberator in question is, of course, the man who knew no sin, and who always was and always remains absolutely free from sin. This, of course, is our Lord. Citing Psalm 87, verse 6, St. Bernard calls Christ, quote, "He who alone of all men was made free among the dead, free, that is, from sin in the midst of sinners," end quote. Concerning this second freedom, freedom from sin, the mellifluous doctor eloquently addresses the question of good will versus bad will in words that should encourage us. By the word mellifluous, that's one of his titles as doctor. He's the mellifluous doctor, which means the honey-tongued doctor. Mel is the Latin word for honey. Okay, when a person complains and says, "I wish I could have a good will, but I just can't manage it," this in no way argues against the freedom, i.e., freedom from necessity, the first freedom, of which we have been speaking, as if the will thus suffered violence or was subject to necessity. Rather, he is witnessing to the fact that he lacks that freedom which is called freedom from sin. Because whoever wants to have a good will proves thereby that he has a will. And since his desire is aimed at good only through his will,